Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. Thank you very much for hanging out with me. I'm Jim Blasingame, and you're listening to the Small Business Advocate Show. I'm glad you're here. A new friend, Russell Sykes, is here too, ladies and gentlemen. Russell is a senior fellow with the Empire Center for New York State Policy, which is a project of the Manhattan Institute. You know who they are. Those guys are regular guests on my show. Well, he's one of them. But prior to this, though, he spent a number of years managing the welfare program for the state of New York. And so he's an expert in the whole welfare landscape, especially with regard to the success of the 1996 Welfare Act. There was a bipartisan bill that was passed, as you heard me say earlier. I consider it to be one of the most successful in maybe in 100 years. One of the top ones maybe in our history. And he's here to talk to us about the fact that law might be in some jeopardy right now. Russell Sykes, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
Good to have you here. All right, I doubled down on my original assessment, and I'm going to say that the Welfare Act of 1996 was one of the best pieces of legislation in our history, in the country's history. Would that be an overstatement?
No, I don't think so. We went through fits and starts since the original welfare program started in 1935 to try to reform it, quote-unquote, and the 1996 law, for the first time, basically said that work had to be better than welfare. People had to work in exchange for benefits.
It basically reversed what I consider to be the mistakes that were made in the 60s.
I think that's right, and the caseload changed so much over time. When it first started, the old Aid to Families with Dependent Children program in 1935, a lot of this was for widows, mm-hmm. but as you know, it morphed into a program basically for single unmarried mothers and their children.
Right, and it became a way of basically just keeping people down, really, and it was by design preventing people from getting ahead, because if they had to make a decision, okay, do I work and make $5, and if I don't work, I get $5, and if I work and take government money but make $6, the government's going to take that extra dollar away from me. I'm being oversimplistic, but basically it put people in a position of having to make those decisions, and it's no humans should have to make that decision.
Yeah, and I think what the 1996 law did, as well as stressing work, is that it gave states the ability to reduce their welfare caseloads and to take the savings from those caseload reductions and reinvest them in things that made work mm-hmm. Made work pay. For instance, child care, the earned income tax credit, a number of things. So the decision was no longer if you go to work, you're not going to be much better off than if you're on welfare. The decision was very different. To give you a prime example, right now, if you're on welfare in New York State, all you can really count on is that yearly welfare benefit and food stamp benefits. It gets you about $15,000 a year. But if you go to work in New York State and get a job for $8.50 an hour, you can make up to $33,000. So there's mm-hmm. really a huge contrast now because of the Welfare Reform Act of 96.
Right. So basically that act encouraged people to go to work, which as you and I both know, most humans want to be self-reliant. I think it is in our nature to want to be that way. Only when the government, rigs the system against you, do you wind up getting into a downward spiral. But coming into the world, most of us wanted to be self-reliant, and have self-determination. And so this 96 law basically gave them back their self-respect.
I think to a great degree. It also put states on the spot by saying, look, you have to engage 50% of all your able-bodied people, and you have to get them either working or preparing mm-hmm. for work. And so that was a measure that state, and that's the key thing that's trying to be undone here. States had a clear work participation rate, and as you said, they could no longer just write checks to mm-hmm. clients and let the clients languish and sit at home and not do anything.
Well, and if you remember, in the late 90s, we needed all those people because we were
absolutely
fully employed by 1999. And I remember reporting on this show, thank goodness for that law, because otherwise we wouldn't have enough workers. Well, okay, so here we are, fast forward now, 15 or so years since the law was passed, and where are we now?
Out of the blue, in July.
I'm sorry. Basically, the assessment is that it's been a wild success ever since, right?
I think the assessment is there would be some that would dispute that, but people are generally better off. We've been in a prolonged recession, as you know now, and that's made some issues about finding employment hard for everyone, not just folks who are trying to leave welfare, but definitely I think people are better off whenever they're working. There's no doubt about it. But I think where we are now, quite candidly, is that out of the blue, in July of this year, the Obama administration put out an administrative memo from their agency that runs the welfare program, Health and Human Services, that indicated that they wanted to provide, quote, states more flexibility. But what it really did in four ways is potentially really undermine the entire work message of the 1996 Act. The first way is that it offered states the option in at least two instances to do away with those core work participation rates that have governed the program since 96 for some other sort of fuzzier measures that us are not accountable and not really the direction the program was meant to be going.
What do you call that?
Well, it's called the work participation rate, and the program, as you know, is now called the Temporary Assistance to Needy Families Block Grant. And states get a block grant of dollars and have a great deal of latitude already how they spend them. But the work participation rate was at the heart of the success. It said to states that 50% of your caseload has to be working or engaged.
And so they lowered that requirement and basically allowed people to revert back to where they toward where they were before 1996.
Well, they allowed states the option, if they apply for such an option, to waive those participation rates altogether in lieu of other kinds of measures, which are softer and less accountable. And they've also allowed states to extend periods of education and training. This was a classic thing of what happened before the 96 Act, where a lot of people would go into these educational settings, often proprietary schools and others, and they would languish there in a program that had no relevance to actually ultimately getting a job.
But this is going to undermine almost over 15 years of success, isn't it?
Well, it's certainly going to has the potential to squander a great deal of it, and I think that's troubling because states have tried some of the approaches that this new waiver had before, and really has not to little avail.
When we come back, I'm going to ask Russell to help us understand what we should be thinking about, what we should be doing, how this should affect our voting decisions.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.